Canucks Central Wednesday. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah with you from the Kintec studio. A lot to come today. Kevin Woodley will join us. And as it is Wednesday, overrated, underrated in the next hour of the show.
Hyped.
How many Phil DiGiuseppe comments did we get today? Josh will know, and we will find out.
I mean, it's competition between Phil DiGiuseppe comments and Aaron Rodgers comments.
Yeah.
Who has been the talk of the sports world the past 24, 48 hours.
We'll have to talk about that because it is the worst leverage situation I've ever seen in a sports situation. So we'll get to that. And I said situation twice in very quick succession, so that's bad on me.
You put yourself in a sticky situation.
A lot I want to get to, though. Mm-hmm. We'll get to salary cap and some things that happened coming out of the GM meetings. As always, Sat was right.
We'll discuss things.
Everybody gets hyped about like movement and stuff like that, and Sat's just like, no. Probably not going to happen. And then most of the time, Sat is right. It's just this year's trade deadline was the one outlier.
I was so happy to be wrong about the trade deadline.
You were wrong for once.
Well, at least a few times.
So there's seemingly a feeling with the Canucks on this run. They've won five in a row. They've played a lot better defensively. Things have flipped. The script has flipped for this team with Rick Tocchet. And it's not, running hot on the power play, completely relying on the goaltender. They're controlling play against some pretty good hockey teams.
I mean, they did control the high danger scoring chances against the Dallas Stars.
Yep. A tired Stars team, but
hey, again, all you can control is what you can do against the teams that you're forced to play against.
They were comfortable against the Ottawa Senators,
yep,
who are fighting for their playoff lives in complete desperation. And the Sens were pretty much the second best team for 90% of that game. It's been really encouraging and a stark contrast to anything we saw earlier this year, especially earlier this year, but even a stark contrast into the ways they had success with Boudreau last year. And of course, there is going to be the longstanding question of sustainability.
Yeah.
But let's put that on the shelf for a day, Sat.
Tabled.
And focus on where they're having success.
Okay.
And a sentiment I keep getting while watching these games and through fans on Twitter and on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox, this decor right now is better than the one that started the season. So, I'm going to be honest with you. When I went to the notes to look back at what the Canucks decor was on the opening night of the season, I misremembered who was in the starting lineup. But it was OEL, Hughes, Pullman, Schenn, Stillman, Burrows. Yes. Myers was hurt for the first few games of the season. Pullman was in the lineup.
Tucker Pullman. Trust the old Pullman.
Yeah, who still leads this team in Corsi 4 percentage for the year at 59% in the three games that he played. I'm going to be honest.
He's been the missing piece.
I did not remember Tucker Pullman being in the opening night lineup. But
a lot's happened this past year, Dan.
It's been a year, to quote your favorite player of years past.
Tyler Greovac.
Yes. Compared to this decor right now, which is having a lot of success, Quinn Hughes, Noah Juulsen, Guillaume Brisebois, Tyler Myers, Christian Willanen, Kyle Burrows. Obviously, results-wise, it's been better. It's a smaller sample.
Yeah.
But it's hard to deny that it has worked, certainly in these last five games. And if you extrapolate that over the most of the tenure of Rick Tocchet, this decor, whatever has been there, injuries or otherwise, has had more success since the coaching change.
Yeah, I mean, it absolutely has. And you're right, the defense has played better. Like, it's undoubtedly so, right? I mean, defensively, they've been better as a team. But I think a lot of it also is not just the defensemen, it's how they play as a team. And I know the coaching staff itself, I mean, or Tocchet himself has mentioned this, that a lot of our success is also based on the forwards helping out. And I think that is also evident in with everything that's going on. So I think it's fair to say these defensemen right now, this D-core as constructed, looks the best out of anything we've seen. But I think a lot of it goes to how they're playing as a team and emphasis on team, which means the forwards and how they're helping out. And you can see it just in terms of their board play and having guys be able to help other defensemen to win battles, get pucks out, be available for outlets, you know, coming back deeper for back pressure, tracking back, which essentially is back checking, like Tocchet's mentioned. You do those things, you're going to be better defensively. Back checking is not something just defensemen do. Back checking is what forwards have to do, especially with in transition and through the neutral zone, staying on the right side of the puck, protecting the inside. And we're seeing a lot more of that, and that means your overall team defense is going to be better.
Yeah. The one thing that has stood out the most is probably the fact that they're able to break out the puck better.
Yeah. A lot of that is availability of
they're more
outlets.
Connected.
Yes.
They are way more connected. And that's partially, you know, forwards coming low to give their defensemen somewhere to pass the puck to. You know, I still think some players have had their troubles when they really get pressured down low on the forecheck.
Yeah.
Tyler Myers still has those issues. I haven't always liked what I've seen from Burrows lately, but regardless, the results have been there. And is it more a product of these defensemen are better than what was there before, or a product of this team is playing much more like a team right now?
I think it's,
for me, it's the latter.
I think it's, I know people really want to buy into, and honestly, I'm not trying to say at all that you shouldn't be buying into what a lot of these defensemen have done, right? Like, I think that they have played really well.
Yeah.
And I think what you're seeing, just in terms of traits, they're fitting into what the Canucks want to do. Guys who move the puck quickly, that skate fairly well. And which means your guys are going to be quick to pucks and get the puck quickly to guys who are available. So as long as you provide these players available outlets, they're going to be able to do the job, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's fine. But what's also very evident, because you don't have other real top four defensemen on the roster that can play any situation, you're leaning heavily on Quinn Hughes. He's playing, you know, I know he played just over 24 minutes against the Stars, but he's been playing 28 minutes a game, especially with, you know, the amount of injuries they have on the back end at this point. That's not something you can do consistently, expect to get away with, right? Like, that's something you can't do for a full season. So a lot of what you're seeing is them doing a good job with what's available, but imagine what the team can look like if you upgrade these players. You know, and that's not to say anything or diminish the contributions Breezeball and Willanen are making, but wouldn't it be great if you upgrade on these players and guys like OEL and Myers, and we're talking about these guys being organizational depth, that when injuries happen next season, how confident are you going to be if you have Breezeball and Willanen stepping in and playing 17, 18 minutes a game? You'll feel pretty good.
Yeah.
You'll feel like, you know what? They can play within our structure. We shouldn't miss too much of a beat as a team. We can still be competitive and be a playoff squad and make it. And I think if these guys are your depth, that's fantastic. Let's upgrade on those players. And then you take a step as a team.
Ultimately, you know, you still have the roadblock of Oliver Ekman-Larsson. And what do you do with that player?
Yeah.
Now, we don't have a large sample of what OEL could do with the better structure that's been brought in by Rick Tocchet, at least with this team. You know, he did, as we know, play with Tocchet in Arizona, and it wasn't always the most, you know, friendly relationship per reports out of Arizona. But even though both have declined that, it's still a situation the Canucks have to figure out this year. And could you get by buying out OEL and having Willanen or Breezeball play in a third pair and then fit in X onto your second pair D in place of a bought out Oliver Ekman-Larsson? That's a real question that this team needs to be asking. But to your point, you know, one thing that has stood out, at least in some of the deployment, Christian Willanen has started 86% of his shifts in the offensive zone.
Which is, what does that tell you? It's sheltered.
Yes.
Which is fine, and he's having success.
He's having great success. What do you do? You know, he's plus five in those 5-on-5 minutes.
I think this is also, and I'm not trying to talk up the coaching staff and say they're doing a tremendous job, but what they're doing is putting guys in positions where they can be successful.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are probably not going to be able to handle huge minutes and big defensive zone starts and be successful. But you know who can right now? Quinn Hughes. So yeah. He gets those tough assignments. He gets everything that's difficult. He handles it. Same thing with Tyler Myers. These guys, they get to play easier minutes, play mm-hmm. minutes that they can be successful in. And they are being successful in it, you know, and that's fine. But that also tells you they're sheltered players so far. And unless you see these guys play tougher minutes, tougher matchups, and the coaching staff show those guys trust, we won't know if they can adequately handle those roles or not. And I'd like to see them do it, you know? Yeah. And I'd like to see for the rest of this season, as much as they've won 5 in a row, and I know the coaching staff's happy with the efforts and how their guys are playing, but in terms of seeing what you have here, they've earned enough ice time. They've earned enough opportunity.
Yeah.
So let's
give them a bit more of a stress test.
Yeah, exactly. Great way of putting it. Let's give them more of a stress test. Let's see what these guys are capable of. Let's see when they break. Because right now, you've had them in situations where they haven't really faced that type of make or break pressure yet.
Yeah, and we'll see as the Canucks go on the road how that changes, if at all.
And I want to see it. And I'm not saying, like, I don't think they can do it. Like, I'm skeptical to some degree because I'm naturally skeptical about
players
doing
it. Well, that's part of the
process.
And that's the frustration of watching, you know, guys play 28, 30 minutes a night. Like, let's see if somebody else can handle this.
Yeah.
I know JT Miller can handle certain minutes. I know, you know, Elias Pettersson can have success in any situation that he's in on the ice, but are we not trying to find out who else can do that?
For sure. And I mean, as far as OEL goes too, to the point you made a bit earlier as well, like if we're thinking of OEL, the best version of him being a player who has to play more sheltered minutes.
Yeah.
Kind of like the way Willanen's playing. Well, why pay him $7 million to do that when you can pay Willanen $800K next year to do the same thing on your third pair?
And have success.
Right. And then that opens, let's say you buy him out. So even though you have a few years of $4 million, over $4 million on the buyout for OEL, if you can replace what OEL can do on the third pair for a guy making $1 million,
that helps.
That means that opens up, even on those years, an extra couple million to do other things for you. So even though it's hard to look at that cap hit on your books, it would give you a chance to upgrade your team, even though you have dead money on it. And that's depending on what you see from OEL. And that's why, like, we'll see if OEL does come back the rest of the season and what they want to do with him, because he's going to have to provide more than capable third pairing minutes for you to feel comfortable with that. Because you're seeing guys get sheltered minutes making a lot less, being able to provide a little something.
Yeah, and that's, look, if you're going to go in next year or try to add to this team, one of the easiest ways to do that or create more cap space to do that, not just making a trade of Besser, Garland, Beauvillier, as we've talked about ad nauseum, it's buying out Oliver Ekman-Larsson.
Well, and that's part of it, you know, and that's, you know, is the owner willing to do that? And that's the biggest question.
Would be
here.
One of the richest buyouts in NHL history.
Yeah, and that's why at the end of the day, I'll believe it when I see it. Mm-hmm. We can talk about the benefits of it and how you can actually work around it and what you can do if those are the things you do want to do. But is the desire actually there, right? And I think that's a big part of it. But the other side of, you know, somebody says, how long will Anna make 800K? But if you're playing a type of system the Canucks are, you're more predictable, and you have a coach who's aware of where to put guys to be successful and types of situations to have them in, then you never need to overpay for your third pair of guys.
Yeah.
You can find the Willanens who can play on the third pair with 75%, 70%, 60%, 80% off of his own starts.
Yes.
And have some success.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to overpay for that guy.
It's going to put more stress on your top four to do that over 82 games, but you can find guys that can fill that type of a role.
Yeah, if that's what you want to do, right? Yeah. And ultimately, what you need to do is have a bunch of good top four defensemen. And if you have that, now you're onto something.
So that brings me to my next point. I was going through it. Shayna Goldman and the Athletic staff worked on a piece for all of the teams that are on the outside of the playoffs looking in. And there's a, according to one of their models, you know, the ingredients, the recipe for a Stanley Cup contender and what you need in order to build a Stanley Cup contender. So there's an elite center, an elite winger, elite defenseman, elite goalie. You could argue right now, today, the Canucks have had that this year with Pettersson, Kuzmenko, Hughes, and what we've seen from Thatcher Demko in the last couple weeks. Not what we saw early in the season, but more Thatcher Demko since he's come back from injury. Beyond that, you need a top-line center, so another top-line center on top of your elite center, another top-line winger, actually two top-line wingers, and another top-end defenseman. Now, per this model, Filip Hronek would fill that second top-end defenseman. Beyond that, you need two more top six forwards and two more top pair defensemen.
Mm-hmm.
That's generally what a true Stanley Cup contender looks like. So the Canucks actually check a lot of these boxes.
So the version of the Canucks checking these boxes, let's go through the top one. That's Pettersson.
Yep.
That's your top center.
Mm-hmm. Your elite winger is Kuzmenko.
Okay.
Quinn Hughes is your elite defenseman. And your elite goalie would be Thatcher Demko.
Those are four guys right there.
JT Miller would be a borderline top-line center right now with the value he's provided. Top-line winger would be Anthony Beauvillier. You don't have that. Brock Besser has not provided that level value. So actually, despite the name value the Canucks have on the wing...
And the money they're spending on the wing,
they haven't actually gotten the success out of those positions that you would need to be a Stanley Cup contender. Then the two more top six forwards, Mikheyev and Garland, are checking the boxes so far. And then your next two top pair defensemen, to round out your top four, Myers and OEL fall well short of the standard of a Stanley Cup contender.
So, I mean, it's kind of like the discussion we've had, right? And one thing it doesn't, I mean, that third line center, and I think if you look at your second line center being a top center, that means you think of him being your matchup guy, peaky guy, do-it-all guy. I'm not sure JT is that guy, so you probably still need a third line guy that can provide something.
He's played that role on this homestand.
He has, and he's done well with it, right? Yeah. And maybe he does it well next year, and he is the guy, and if he is, that answers a lot of questions. But you'd like to have a little bit of cover for that, at least some soft cover.
They have no cover.
Right. Oman is great, but can he elevate to a third line role next year, or is he suited for the fourth line role next year still?
Probably fourth line.
So you still are missing a guy, but I think you can patch that over with a free agent for a 1 or 2 year deal, and there's a plethora of guys who are 27 to 30, 32 that can provide that, like good at face-offs, good on the PK, have played head-to-head and done decently. You can find a guy like that in free agency and pay
Lars Eller type.
Yeah, Lars Eller. I mean, Noel Achari even. There are a bunch of guys making under $2 million. I mean, even David Kampf, who's had success with Toronto, he's not making a lot of money. You can find a guy not making a ton doing that for you.
Would help on the PK too, Kampf.
Yeah. And
decent player.
Yeah, not bad, right? Yep. There are some guys like that available. But if you can find that other driving forward is what you need.
Yes.
Because the Canucks have a bunch of good complimentary guys. Like, I love the third guy on a line players they have, right? Mikheyev, who I'm a huge fan of, right? Mm-hmm. And even Beauvillier, we talk about Garland, even Besser could fit that. But could you find another high-end winger? That's what you need. On high-end forward. One more high-end forward and two defensemen who can defend.
Yeah, and the problem is you're spending money there on those forwards, but they're not giving you that level value.
And if you can shift things around, right? Mm-hmm. And Garland had a good game the other night, and he's been a lot closer to a point-per-game player since Tockett's taken over.
I kind of don't mind Garland in the role that he's playing right now. Driving your third line.
I understand, Dan, and I get this, and I'm not trying to be negative with you, but it's like, gotta let go. You know what I mean? It's like, gotta let go with these nice pieces.
Sat
and find
is
the great
Elsa
piece.
From Frozen.
Gotta let go, man. I mean, it's like, you know what it is? Does it really spark joy for you or not? Because if it doesn't truly spark joy, it's no point just holding on to the piece. You know, you can make room.
Can somebody confirm or deny? I heard Marie Kondo, like somebody went to her residence, and it was a disaster.
Apparently, she gave up because she had a bunch of kids or something. I
can't really fault that. Like, I don't know.
And I'm not saying that in a demeaning way at all. I'm saying like that's the story, and that's the gist of the story essentially. And
so Marie Kondo
is
no longer, the organization. You know,
queen. Spark joy. Like, I'm not worried about that. I got my kids spark joy. That's what I'm worried about. Essentially her mentality at this stage. But for me, it's like if Garland's played well enough, where you can actually move him and get something, do it.
Yeah.
You know, and get the cap space and then go and try to find that other forward, the next guy they need, right? And if you have enough space, you can go find those two defensemen. Like, there are pathways this offseason where you may not find that true driving forward because it's a hard thing to find unless you get lottery luck. And that's what you're hoping for, right?
Yep. But
outside of that, it's easier for you to find a top four defenseman who can help you out and maybe trade for another one.
So, yes, but this is sort of the issue is where, and not to bring it back to like, why did you make the Hronek deal? But you make that deal and it's like, great, now you've got two really good defensemen, but you still need two more. And now you're down a big asset to go out and collect that with. And you're also out the cap space that it's going to cost to keep Filip Hronek in town. And you already are right up against the cap. Not to relitigate everything that was being discussed when the trade was made, but that's essentially the gist of it. And you still need to go out and find two top-end defensemen.
Yeah, and I mean, what I think too is like if you're at this stage, don't be like, I'm not saying be all in and trade all your futures.
Yep.
But if we're talking about
trying to be good over the next 2-3 year period.
Yeah, and like, and I don't think this team is looking to trade JT, but if you're looking to trade JT, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you are open to it, you wanted somebody to replace him, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think you should be going after guys like Sam Reinhart. I'd rather have JT than Sam Reinhart. Like that's what I think about it. But can you get a Sebastian Aho?
Yes.
And listen,
go out and get him.
My point is, yes, my point is he may not even be available, but we know that he may not want to stay in Carolina either. My point being here is
he's going into the final year of his deal next year.
If you're actually contemplating moving off JT, to me, don't go move off JT and sign a few free agents and get a few $4-5 million players or whatever it is. Like, if that's the guy you're moving, go and find a superstar.
Yeah.
Like if you want to upgrade on him, like don't go sideways or get a guy who's 75% of what JT is and try to solve other issues somewhere and get better around the edges. Like that guy, when he plays at a high level, he can give you something solid. Yeah. I'm not getting rid of that unless I'm finding an upgrade. And if you're looking to do that, go big. Mm-hmm. To me, it's about going big or going home if you're looking at upgrading your roster.
And that's essentially kind of what the JT Miller trade conversation came down to, was like, well, we're not giving up this player unless we get something to fill that space.
Yeah, it's like
something
anything.
That we really like to fill that space.
Yeah, and it's not like they're playing fantasy GM here, but that's a pretty basic conversation. We like our player. We don't want to get rid of our player unless we find somebody better.
And
how realistic is that generally for good players? Not very. It's hard to do.
But, you know, I think there's two things here. You know, all of the contenders spend above it because of the flat cap situation we found ourselves in. So it's about efficiently spending that money. And the Canucks don't efficiently spend their money right now, right? Oliver Ekman-Larsson and Tyler Myers are not top pair defensemen. And they're both still under contract for next year. So how do you remedy that towards building filling out your Stanley Cup ingredients? Now, you know, top pair, top end defensemen don't all look the same, mm-hmm. right? You know, these models would consider the Maple Leafs to be a Stanley Cup contender. And how many of the names that they trot out in their decor every night do you consider top pair defensemen, right?
Well, it's like
Morgan Riley's not playing like one this year. TJ Brody is maybe that kind of a guy. Jake McCabe doesn't look like that guy. Mark Giordano's not that guy anymore. Timothy Liljegren has played a really nice role for them over the last, but they got like six guys that are really good, you know?
Good players. I mean, how many of those guys, they have one top three guy, and the rest are like number fours?
Yeah. They've got a lot of number fours.
Right. Which is fine.
The Canucks right now, like if Hronek continues to play like he has in Detroit this year, Canucks have kind of two number ones.
Yeah, they got two top pairing guys.
Two top pairing guys. And if you do, they got an elite guy and another top pairing guy.
Well, and that's why if you put them together, then you have a super pair. But if you split them up and each guy can carry a pair, then all of a sudden your top four is somewhat solved. Not that it's solved completely, but if each one of those guys can carry a deep pair, that means you're going to win your matchups in your top four.
And we know Quinn Hughes can do that.
Yeah.
Now can Hronek do it?
And if he can, then all of a sudden now you're cooking with something, right?
So you're looking at, let's say you buy out OEL. You're looking at having to go out and find one other big-time defenseman, at least. Like, you have to find one other legit top four guy to play with Filip Hronek.
Okay, when we say top four guy, what's your profile that we're talking about?
Well, for this team specifically, it has to be a guy that can defend and play PK minutes. Yeah. Like, it has to be.
And not to say that's harder to find in some degrees, in terms of young players, but you can find some veterans that can do those things. It's hard.
The obvious name is Gavrikov.
Yeah, and ultimately we'll see. And he does have Milstein as his agent. What's the price going to cost?
Yeah.
And there was a notion of whether he wanted to play in Canada or not, or maybe that's just taking people off the scent.
Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever. We'll see what happens with Gavrikov.
If the Canucks get Gavrikov, can like part of the deal be that We Are Gold Star is their, you know, jersey sponsor next year?
Might be great. Great jersey sponsor.
Can we like somehow lower Gavrikov's AAV by working that into the deal?
Yeah, might be.
That's the type of thing that Patrick Alvin needs to ask.
Gary may call that circumventing the cap. So I'm not quite sure. But I mean, you know, there's the obvious name. And yes, I know people, if you look at his analytics, they don't love it. But I think when you watch him play, he does things well. You can look at it as, okay, you put him alongside Hronek, for instance, and he's the defensive guy with size, with a good pair and a team that plays better, then he's going to look a lot better and do those things for you potentially. But there are some risks, obviously, you know, associated with doing something like that. But there you go. You can solve one of your defensive issues with a player like that.
Yeah.
And that is feasible if you have some cap space, which I think they are going to be able to carve out to some extent. And especially if these guys continue playing well down the stretch. I mean, we're talking about, you know, Connor Garland, who we're mentioning before. Now he has 15 points in 20 games under Tocchet.
Mm-hmm.
Looking a lot more like the player we saw last season.
And that's helpful. And Besser had the 3 assists last night. Beauvilliers continued to churn out and, you know, pick up points here and there. So things have looked a lot better across the lineup under Rick Tocchet. But this team is still missing a few Stanley Cup ingredients, as we know. Keep your text coming in, 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. We'll read some of those. And Kevin Woodley is going to join us next on Sportsnet 650. Canuck Central in the Kintech studio. Kintech Footwear and Orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, supported by over 2,500 five-star Google reviews. Find your perfect fit at kintech.net. Stan Riccio and Satyar Shah. Here in the Kintech studio, we welcome in our next guest, the goalie guru himself, In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. It is Kevin Woodley. What's happening, Woodley?
Not much. Sun is shining. It's spring. Done a couple of podcasts today with some cities that are warming up for playoff hockey. So I guess we'll just have to settle with the summer here, eh?
Yeah. When do you bring the golf clubs out? Not till the season's over?
Usually wait till the hockey season's over, which for both Beer League and the Canucks tends to be, you know, early mid-April of late. Would happily delay it, and hopefully we're doing that in coming years, because I gotta say, like, it's funny doing those other podcasts in those other cities as they gear up. Like, even though we're still 3 weeks away, it's, there's just an excitement that I miss, and so I can't wait to sort of get back to that. I know we're impartial observers, but there's an energy to it that we haven't had a chance to experience here in a long time, obviously with the one being in the bubble that, I kind of got it caught up in it a little bit today, talking to some of these other spots. And, yeah, I can't wait to get back to it here.
Well, I will say, Woodley, Canucks, still possible for them to get to 95 points.
Stop it. Stop it.
You are the house of positivity, Reach. I like it.
I'm just saying, hey, Thatcher's playing really well. All of a sudden, 95 points, you know, 20 wins in a row. Doesn't seem that that crazy to
me. If there is a goalie who could win 20 in a row, who would it be? Would it be Demko?
I'm not saying. I'm just saying.
He's been really good, though.
Yeah, he has, and that's encouraging, you know, whether it's 20 in a row this year or, you know, this team getting off to finally a better start next year. And, you know, showing us that what's happening right now isn't, you know, just a late season bump. And again, like, we've seen this before, so there's that caveat. There's that cautiousness you have to have. We're actually seeing, like, it's not just the Canucks. Like, we're seeing other teams. Chicago beat Boston last night. You know, Arizona's record in this last little while isn't nearly as bad as it was at the beginning of the season. Anaheim, when they came in here, were like on a 5-1-1 roll. So, you know, it's sort of a little bit par for the course, and a lot of teams get caught up in it. And the key is to sort of build off it next year, and we'll see if it happens. Having a healthy, mobile, you know, just the way he's moving right now, Thatcher Demko plays a really big role in that. And so in talking to him and in hearing the scrums and talking to him a little bit on the side, there's a positivity in terms of how he feels that bodes really well, regardless of whether you think this is real or not from a team perspective. Having that guy that we saw 2 years ago back between the pipes is going to be a big part of whatever success they have. And, you know, I can tell you beyond what he's saying publicly, like privately, he feels really, really good about his body right now. And that's so important coming off the injury he had.
Well, it certainly looks like it from our very layman eye test that we can provide watching goaltenders. But when you're evaluating how he's playing, are we seeing the same goalie in terms of his movements and how he's playing? Or are we actually seeing maybe a more efficient goaltender with his movements?
No, I just think we're seeing the guy back to last year. The difference is, in part because the chances haven't been as dynamic as often as we saw earlier this season. Like, he's not been put in a position to pull his body apart in different directions as often as he has over the past year and a half or up until this last injury. So that's part of it. But I do think there are some mechanics in movement and some things he's doing. You know, he's talked about, I think I've heard him use the word physiology multiple times in interviews. I've heard him use the word biomechanics, which I hadn't heard before in interviews. You know, he's training in a different way, activating muscles, heading into games, and even when he's on the ice, in a way that I'm not sure he's, you know, completely to this degree done before. And he feels really good in doing it, in talking to him. So, you know, that all bodes well. I don't know that from a performance standpoint, you know, it gets much better than what we saw last season, like just the way he played, the explosiveness. But to be able to do it and feel good afterwards and not, you know, not have any soreness, not feel it in the joints, like these are all really positive things for him, especially given, you know, the injury of last offseason and the injury that happened, you know, on December 1st of this season. So, again, just I don't know from a performance standpoint that you're going to see better necessarily beyond the fact that this is a guy that thinks the game really well. And the longer he plays and more experience he gets, the better he processes the game. Like, there's still going to be improvements that way. But I'm thinking more long-term, like durability, like Thatcher Demko having a long and successful career as opposed to just a successful career are all things that I'm more optimistic about coming out of this injury the way he has than I was perhaps going into it.
We've heard Rick Tocchet praise the rebound control of Thatcher so often, and you know, maybe that's in part because the goalies before were struggling with their rebound control. But you know, what's the key for that for netminders? Like, how do they, you know, make their rebound control as efficient as Thatcher does?
Well, I mean, the biggest part, and this goes to environment too, and this is easier now than it was before, is making good reads, being ahead of plays. And what did we talk about a lot with Thatcher's game, you know, last season, the pace of it and the fact that he was never behind a play. And that was impressive when the environment was as dynamic as it was in terms of the quality they gave up. It becomes, I'm not saying easy, but easier as that environment gets a little more goalie friendly. As Rick Tocchet says, they sort of let the goalie deal with one side of the ice and not have to worry as often about both sides, sort of split the ice in half. It allows you to, and allows all goalies to beat plays more often, be set, be square more often. And as soon as you're in control as a shot's coming and you've made a read and you've done all your shot preparation and you're not moving into it, it gets a lot easier to control pucks. Like, a lot of rebound control issues are actually not so much about the actual save execution off the shot. They're about everything that leads up to it. Now, yeah, there are some guys that are better at controlling pucks off their body, that are better at catching pucks, taking blocker shots and moving them into safe areas or even out of play on purpose. Yeah. But a lot of it comes down to preparation and getting into position so that you can make a controlled movement and a controlled save off of the release. If you're behind the play, if you're still in motion as the shot's coming because you haven't been able to beat that pass and get set and get square, you're going to have a much harder time controlling that rebound if you're not set. if you're not square, pucks don't come off your chest and land in front of you, even if you can't smother it with a glove or control it with a blocker. They're going to come off of you on funny angles because you're not square to that puck, right? Like, it's like hitting it on a 45. It's going off to your left or off to your right, whereas if it hits you square because you built that pre-shot, you have a much better job, even when you don't control it perfectly, of at least keeping it in front of you. And that is a part of rebound control as well, is the ability to sort of keep that next opportunity, even if you give it up, in a space you can manage. And the best one is right in front of you or on the same side it came from versus off to the back door and off to the other side. Those are all elements. And they all usually start with getting arriving early, being square, and for the most part being set.
Well, he's certainly shown a lot of that, right? I mean, with how set he's been and just how in control Thatcher has been. And you mentioned the environment, obviously, and we've discussed this quite a bit in terms of it has improved. And it's interesting looking at just the high danger scoring chance differentials, comparing how they're doing rate-wise right now compared to last year on the Boudreaux when they played well. They're actually pretty similar. So I get when people say, hey, why should we buy into this time being different when they did similar things last year under Boudreaux and it didn't stick? Now, it goes beyond the numbers because of some of the things we've spoken about structurally, but that's what I'm curious about in general. Like, are these changes actually meaningful and do the numbers actually show it?
Yeah, I mean, we went through them last week, right, and they've changed a little bit. A couple of them have gotten, you know, changed incrementally since we went over them last year. Actually, the PK's dipped a little bit since we talked about them last week, from, you know, 8th in expected goals against to 13th. But again, they were 24th before the coaching change. I don't know what metrics we're talking about that people are saying are the same to under Boudreaux, but certainly this season, like, and again, last season, they were bottom third team. This season, until the coaching change, they were bottom three. And that is not a difference of 24th to 31st, 7 points. Like, in some cases, it's damn near exponential because of the type of quality they were giving up, especially off the rush, especially with seam plays through the middle, slot line plays. And when I dig in them, you know, use clear sight and look through the microstats, like, they're better since the coaching change in all those areas. And yeah, some of that is going to be a result of quality of opponent, and even the good quality opponents coming in on back-to-back nights and not giving you their A game. And it is a small sample, but, you know, slot line plays, 32nd before the change, 12th since. Screens, 27th before, 4th since. Broken plays, which, you know, we talk about taking care of the guts of the ice. That's broken plays. That's taking care of the front of your net, not allowing second chance opportunities. Like, those opportunities are going to, like, inherently, they're going to go off legs, go off bodies. There will be broken plays in front of your goaltender. How many of them result in a shot on goal? That's what we're measuring here. 31st in the league before the coaching change, 5th since the coaching change. Slot area shots, 32nd in the league before the change, 2nd now since the change. So all those little micro stats that, when we talk about the environment being more goalie friendly, are they perfect? No. Is it sustainable? We'll find out. Are they better? Absolutely.
Well, and you know what? Just and the point I was trying to make here is, and we've discussed this quite a bit, like, the traditional shot metrics and even the high danger scoring chances and expected goals, they don't take into consideration enough variables comparatively to what you guys have with clear sight analytics, or what you have access to with clear sight analytics. So you can look at the numbers and say, yeah, the raw high danger scoring chances that are deemed high danger scoring chance shot attempts, they're pretty much the same. Expected goals against are pretty much same, but that doesn't really describe the overall environment, does it, to the degree that you were kind of breaking down here in terms of the chances? And not every high danger scoring chance is graded equally.
No, but again, and like, I don't want to crap on any of the other numbers, because the people behind those sites that track that stuff, like, these are incredibly smart people doing incredibly good work. They're just doing it with data that doesn't have as much context as we would like. And in a large sample, a lot of that context, they would argue, becomes noise. But we're not talking about a large sample. That's not what a season is. A season is not necessarily a large sample, and we're even smaller here. And when I look at their expected goals against since the coaching change, like, I don't see similarities. I see 28th before and 12th after. On the rush, 32nd before, 18th after. Defensive zone from 27th to 20th. I mean, you still like to be on in-zone play better than 20th. Off the rush, you'd like to be better than 18th. But to be there from 32nd and 27th, like, those are huge changes. And, you know, I just think that you need that extra context to have. Listen, the context that public numbers provides is better than nothing. But I think you need more context than that. And I just, like I said, I'm blessed to be able to look under the hood and dig up these numbers. And this is what they show. And they show a team that, you know, even in expected goals overall is significantly better. And in the areas where they have talked openly about focusing, even more so when you drill down, like I said, gut to the ice. To me, that's broken plays and slot line plays. And both of those areas are significantly better.
Are you surprised Thatcher's played as much as he has?
Yeah, maybe a little bit for sure. I think it's a sign of how good he is feeling. And that's a positive. I understand. Like, listen, I get the consternation on the other side of it completely. And I would kind of hope they stick with the three thing, like they sort of indicated, and we're not going to run them out there four or five games in a row. I think a lot of us have read that as probably going to cap him at three starts in a row. And so does he play tomorrow in Arizona? Probably not. But like the first part, we dealt with this in two ways. One was the just shut him down. Don't bring him back at all, in part because we, you know, fans would like to see them continue losing. And my answer to that was he really needs to know if everything works, if he can trust his body again the way he used to. And the answers right now are even more so. So that's a positive. And that was important for him heading into the summer. The last thing you wanted to do is head into the summer, having not played, been shut down, and have all those things bouncing around in your head. You know, he talked about the mental scar tissue. Well, he's had a chance to clean most of that up. Well, the next step is it going to hold up? Can I play at a starter's workload? Can I play the way I'm going to be next season for a couple of weeks or 3 weeks or a month and still feel this good physically? And, you know, I don't know that that's as important as the first question, but in his mind it might be. And so giving him that peace of mind to a degree matters if you truly intend to be a team next season that wants to make a playoff push. And those are the indications we have. So I'm a little less critical of it. If I felt they were playing the wheels off him and he was breaking down, I would have a different answer. I tell you that honestly, but you know, he feels really good right now, as good as he's felt in a long time, and getting to build on that from a confidence standpoint, I think that has real value for him and for this team moving forward, because he's going to be such a big piece of it.
Do we maybe get to a point where he feels satiated enough where they can maybe like reel this back a little bit? Let's say the final, you know, 7-8 games or whatever. Like, is that a possibility here that they get to a point, he feels good, and they pull him aside and say, hey, this has been great, and now we're kind of going to alternate starts the rest of the way or something? Can that happen?
I guess it could. You know, do I think it would be well received? Probably not. Like, he's a competitor, right? Yeah. Like, this is all, when we talk about sort of raising the bar and new standards and culture, like, you want guys that do what Thatcher did when he was out for 3 months, that find ways to not just recover, but to get better, that find ways to work with new people so that when he returns, he's even better physically and mentally. And that's what he did. You want guys that set the bar higher. And so telling them to sit this one out in the final weeks of the season when you're trying to build a winning culture, as much as I get it, I don't know how that conversation is received. We'll see. I totally understand, and maybe that happens. But knowing how competitive he is, he's going to want to keep playing. That would be my bet. And I find it hard to begrudge that, because that's what you want out of your athletes, even if it doesn't really help you in terms of draft position. As long as you're not pushing him through a threshold where you're risking any type of injury, as long as there are no signs of fatigue in his movement, and we don't see some sloppiness and some favoring and any of those signs return, and there's no risk, then you're basically asking him to stop competing prematurely. And he may even get it, but that doesn't mean he's going to want to do it. That would be my hunch.
So let's get in on the playoffs then, as they are now just a little, actually a month away, even though we won't get to see them here in Vancouver, unless they win out. I'm still holding out hope. No, I'm not.
Stop it.
Okay, I'll stop. But you know, we've seen a lot of teams go through, and we saw it, I guess, last year with Minnesota a little bit, the whole tandem thing. Boston, you know, they've got two goalies in the top five of goals against average, and probably the incumbent Vezina Trophy winner in Linus Allmark. But how many teams do we see go with a tandem in the playoffs this year, Woodley?
Well, did Minnesota really go with a tandem, or did they ride Marc-Andre Fleury into the ground and throw Cam Talbot?
There
Wolves. You go.
Yeah.
Elimination game. Have
that's
fun.
That's true. Fair.
I would like, that's the one to me that still leaves me scratching my head. Only because Fleury needed time to adjust to a new team. And instead of giving him repeated starts down the stretch, they alternated them. And they both played awesome.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's odd. You'd think you'd want to get Fleury more acclimated to this team and how they play. And I talked to him about this just a couple of weeks ago when they were through town, like how long it takes to learn the tendencies of new defensemen. And when they didn't, I thought, okay, that's fine, because they must be planning on going with a tandem in the playoffs. And then they didn't. And so they're a team that I am going to watch very closely to see if they learn their lesson, because Filip Gustavsson has the best adjusted save percentage in the National Hockey League right now.
Yeah.
And since December 15th, Marc-Andre Fleury ain't far behind him. So how they manage those two, especially given that even a couple of years ago in Vegas when it was Lehner and Fleury, they both posted the best numbers of their time in Vegas, for sure, close to the best numbers of their career, over a three-month stretch where they alternated every other start. And so this is now 3 years in a row where Marc-Andre Fleury's kind of looked at his best while not playing every night. If they go to him every night, to me, even though he's playing exceptionally right now, you have lost the plot. You're missing what is leading to the success. And so, and maybe this is, hey, listen, I've had this as a pet project, wanted to see it forever. Why not rotate? I want to see a goaltending tandem in the playoffs. So maybe this is me trying to speak it to existence. But they are the best example. And there are others, like, you know, Linus Allmark for sure, and Jeremy Swayman. Swayman's dipped a little bit of late. But Swayman, you know, up until the last couple of weeks, or last week even, was posting adjusted numbers from mid-December on that were right up there with Linus Allmark. Gustavsson and Flower, I mentioned. Sorokin and Varlamov. Like, for all the talk about, you know, if the Canucks had traded Thatcher Demko, where would they go, and Tristan Jarry in free agency? Like, my number one target in free agency would be Semyon Varlamov, especially if he's a 1A and you've got a guy to play with him, because his numbers right next to Ilya Sorokin have been, like, not far behind a guy we talk about as being a Vezina candidate. So, you know, there's a lot of options there. If they get in, UC Saros is going to be the guy in Nashville, but very quietly, in limited starts, Kevin Lankinen has posted slightly better numbers. So it's, you know, it's, there's a lot of, not, you're obviously not going to sit a UC Saros for a Kevin Lankinen, but if you see signs of, even in that situation, if you see signs of wear and tear, if you were to get on a roll and go for, you know, a little bit of a run, why not? If it works all season, why the hell can't it work in the playoffs too? And that's always what drives me nuts, especially with the teams that have success down the stretch going back and forth, and then all of a sudden it's the playoffs, we can't go back and forth. Toronto, which might be more of a, we need to find one,
yeah,
rather than we got two good ones. I fully expect to see both goalies in the first round of the playoffs there. And when you look at the home and road splits, I'd be tempted to do it that way. Start Samsonov at home. If there's any sign of a fault, to be ready with Matt Murray when you head on the road. Like, there are ways to look at the statistical breakdowns to do this properly, and it doesn't always have to be just start the guy who, you know, has the title of number one, especially at a time when workhorse number ones don't work anymore.
It's funny how this always plays out every single year. We'll have to see how it does in a month from now. Always appreciate
it.
I'll
probably be yelling at it, yep, again, like I always do.
Never. That never happens.
Would be par for the course. All right. Always appreciate the time, Woodley. Thanks for this.
And I appreciate you closing with a golf reference.
Yes. There is Kevin Woodley in Goal Magazine and NHL.com. Joins us every Wednesday to do our goalie guru check-in here on Canucks Central. Yeah. First day of the year, and I can't stop thinking about golf. What else is new?
No, you know, I'm not surprised by that, Dan. You love your golf, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But I thought it was interesting the way, you know, he broke down all the Thatcher Demko stuff about,
you know, body-wise, confidence-wise, him needing to play, wanting to play, and how hard it is to get a competitor not to play.
Yeah.
And that intertwine that we always talk about, it's so challenging as a fan to see that a team's playing well and be like, why are they winning all these games? It's useless.
Yes.
And that's just how players are wired and coaches are wired. Management may feel differently, but they can't control that. And it kind of is what it is, but clearly there are benefits to Thatcher Demko playing a lot and playing well, especially the way Woodley broke it down.
I'm sure the players understand that, like, Connor Bedard may help them.
Yes.
But other than Connor Bedard, do they feel that way? And there's only a small percentage chance that guy's ending up on your team no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very tough for players to sort of wrap their heads around when they are just built to be absolute competitors. Coming up, overrated, underrated. I want to also talk about, you know what? We will put Scottie Scheffler's Masters menu to the test as well for overrated, underrated.
Ooh, I like that.
It's all coming up next on Canuck Central.